This is Live Bet Saturday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour two, let's keep the fun rolling on. It's Live Bet Saturday with me, Joe Serrallo, right here on VSiN. And we've got a lot to get into, including college football coming up here shortly. Before we dive into that, though, with our great guest, Kyle Hunter, who's going to be joining the show here any minute now, I do want to correct something that I misspoke and said in hour one, because we've got a historic Major League Baseball debut going on. Joshua Baez just hit his third home run for the St. Louis Cardinals in his third at-bat. He's driven in all six runs for them. They lead the Cubbies 6-3 at Wrigley right now. He's 3-for-3 with three homers in his Major League career. He had 33 home runs in the minors this season. I said he was the guy that the Mets traded St. Louis last year at the deadline for Ryan Helsley. I made a mistake. That is Jose Baez, who at AA for the St. Louis Cardinals has 30 home runs this season. So the St. Louis Cardinals just happen to have two guys whose initials, first initial was J, last name Baez, with 30-plus home runs in the minors this year. The guy the Mets sent, Jose Baez, still at AA with his 30 home runs. This young man, Joshua Baez, in the bigs. He had 33 in AAA. He's 3-for-3 with three home runs in his Major League Baseball career. Just a ridiculous, incredible debut against Matt Boyd, who has been absolutely phenomenal since coming off the injured list in June. Baez is making this a forgettable day for Matt Boyd and the Chicago Cubs single-handedly. As promised, let's pivot towards college football because we've got a phenomenal guest standing by on the Progressive Guest Line. Let's welcome in Kyle Hunter, college football handicapper at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. Kyle, how excited are you that we are 2 weeks away from week zero? Finally, some college football action right around the corner.
Oh, man. First, thanks for having me on here. It's great to talk college football, but soon we're not just going to be talking about college football. We're going to be watching it. And a lot of work goes into the season. Prep for the season that seems so short, but man, it's almost here and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it is right around the corner, man. So let's dive into some futures plays and some win totals. And you know what I like about this list of yours? Sometimes, you know, we spend so much time, right? It's a long off season and we're talking Indiana and we're talking LSU and the storylines with Kiffin and we're talking about all the big dogs, the SEC, the Big Ten of it all. But there's value when you're spending so much time covering the Big Ten and the SEC in some of these mid-major, smaller market teams, if you will. So let's start in the Sun Belt. What do you like with We Are Marshall out there?
Yeah, I love these more under-the-radar conferences. I think we can find the best value there, both in college football and in college basketball. I know you and I have talked college basketball before as well. You know, here in this case, though, Marshall, I like over 7.5. For the season win total. I think they played better than their final win-loss record looked last year. They found a star quarterback in Del Rio Wilson. The coaching staff brings in a new OC and Smith. They go to this hyper-fast tempo on offense, looking to try to work on the fact that they've got a quarterback that can make quick reads, get things out really quick. He was Jacksonville State's offensive coordinator a couple years ago when they were the fastest-paced team in the country. I like the fit with a great quarterback and probably the deepest group of wide receivers in the Sun Belt for Marshall. I think it'll work really well on offense. And also defensively, much improved in the secondary is Marshall. A lot of teams in the Sun Belt are going to throw it. I think that really helps them quite a bit. You look at the schedule for Marshall, too. I have them have a favorite of more than a touchdown 8 times this season. They're an underdog of only more than 7 points just once. So we're just looking for them to take care of business here to get over the 7.5. I think that's pretty likely they can win at least 9 games. So I really like the plus money price on over 7.5.
What are your thoughts on Marshall potentially winning the Sun Belt at 8-1? It seems like when you look at the futures market, it's kind of James Madison at plus 270. Draw the line, and then your guess is as good as mine there. It's pretty jumbled after JMU. Would you take a shot on Marshall 8-1?
I would. I think I bet more on the season win total, but I've bet some on the future, and I would recommend that as well. I think James Madison has enough question marks that I wouldn't want to be betting them as a big favorite here in the conference. You know, they look so much different than they did a year ago. Maybe it'll work out well. Maybe it won't. I don't want that unknown if I'm taking a big favorite to win the conference. So I think you try to find somebody that's not a favorite here to take in the futures market. And I think the schedule sets up pretty well for Marshall. Obviously, they do have to play at James Madison. That's a tough one. But I think Marshall has a real chance to make a run here this year.
I love it. And by the way, Kyle, for our TV audience, correct me if I'm wrong here. Is that a Marshall hat that you're wearing right now as we do the segment?
It is, yeah. One of my things is to try to get as many college hats as I can. They can be random. They can be big name. It doesn't matter. My daughter's like, how many hats do you have at this point? But yeah, this is a Marshall hat.
I love it. We are all in on the Thundering Herd. Let's talk another team that used to be in the Sun Belt, now over there in the American Conference, North Texas. Are you as high on them as you are Marshall this year? What are your thoughts on this North Texas team?
I am not. And talk about a massive power ratings downgrade. Joe, the people who try to handicap based off the end of what they saw last year, they're in big trouble when it comes to North Texas. I mean, this team is absolutely nothing like they were last season. You know, there's too much turnover now to take what you saw at the end of last year and try to apply it to this year. Just so many new players, so many new coaches. And Neil Brown steps in here, gone Mestemaker and Morris, a really good duo there for the offense for North Texas. And I think that, you know, they could do some decent things at Oklahoma State, even if they might be getting a little bit overvalued in the marketplace now. But North Texas, 137th in recruiting class last year out of 138 teams in the country. So Brown kind of got hired a little bit later here. Recruiting never really took off. He tried to do things in the transfer portal. He didn't get high enough talent, in my opinion. And the offensive line looks like a massive weakness. I think there's going to be a lot of defensive fronts in this conference that will dominate them in the trenches. And, you know, I just think North Texas is in for this stock market drop down that's going to look so much worse than it did a year ago. I have them as an underdog of more than 3 points in 7 games. I have them favored by more than a touchdown just 3 times all season. I think it's pretty likely they start 0-3. And to me, 4-8 looks more likely than 6-6. So you can get under 5.5 here at +110. And I did bet that one.
I like it. 137 out of 138 is not pretty in terms of their recruiting class, like you pointed out. Let's shift towards a more power conference here. Let's talk Illinois in the Big Ten and a bit of a unique angle and unique way to bet them. What do you like for the Illini in just, I mean, a powerhouse of a conference? What do they have, 8 teams in the top 25? You've got Ohio State, Oregon in the top 5. And, oh, by the way, the national champ, the reigning champs as well with Indiana. So what do you like for Illinois in the Big Ten?
Well, Illinois, I mean, Luke Altmaier was really good. He did a great job taking care of the football, bailed out Illinois a lot of times in bad situations. His scrambling ability, I think, was underrated. I like Caden Hauser, and it's possible some of their quarterbacks, the depth they have there at quarterback, can end up being pretty decent. But they're going to be a downgrade from Altmaier, no doubt about that. So the question is, what is the identity of Illinois at this point? We think of Bielema, and we think of great offensive lines. Their offensive line hasn't been any good, really, the last couple years. They look less experienced there this year. I don't think they can lean on an offensive line. Their running backs are clearly below the average in Big Ten. I think 3.9 yards per carry last year. I think they'll probably do worse than that this year. You can't average 3.5 yards per carry and that really be your identity. Illinois has wanted to run the football in the past, but they really can't very well. Caden Hauser, while he has some upside as a passer, does make some bad decisions at times. I think Illinois, too, had a great defensive line the last couple years. No longer the case. Jakus was really good defensive lineman. He's a big loss. They'll be much worse against the run this season. And if you look at the schedule for Illinois, at Ohio State, home against Oregon, they're going to be massive underdogs in both of theirs. I'd be pretty surprised if they don't lose both those games. And Joe, I like UCLA. I think UCLA is going to be better than people think. I think at UCLA is likely a loss. Purdue at home is really only free win that I see on the Illinois schedule. So you could take under 7.5 at -160, but I took under 4.5 in conference wins here in the Big Ten at -115. I just don't love laying -160. I think it's a good play under 7.5, but you know, laying that kind of juice, not something I want to do consistently. So Big Ten wins under 4.5, minus 115 is what I took here.
I'm with you on the avoiding juice, and I like the angle. I like the pick, Kyle. Before we do let you go here, about 45 seconds to go. You look at the Big Ten, you assume Ohio State, Oregon, Indiana going to be in the playoff. If there's a fourth Big Ten squad, USC, Michigan, Penn State, Washington, who of that group do you have the most faith in to make the playoff?
Good question. This is a really, really good conference. I don't trust USC going east. They haven't been able to win games traveling east in the past.
Same here.
I'm a Buckeyes fan, so I don't want it to be Michigan. It could be because Whittingham's such a good coach. I think I would take Washington at that value, though. I think Washington's schedule sets up pretty well, and I do like their coaching staff.
I love it. Kyle, great stuff, man. That was not the pick I was expecting to hear, but I think they're going to be frisky. Appreciate the time. Thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Kyle Hunter Picks. It's College Football Handicapper. Kyle Hunter getting you ready for a season that starts officially in 2 weeks. So, folks, the wait is over, and the VSiN College Football Betting Guide is here to continue helping you get ready for week zero, August 29th. Sign up for VSiN Pro today. You'll get instant access to our College Football Betting Guide, which has previews of all 138 FBS teams. It's also got our preseason top 50, power ratings, and more. Plus, if you sign up for VSiN Pro, you'll get our NFL Betting Guide and the Fantasy Football Guide as well. Start today just $9.99 or get a full year and save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe now.
This is Live Bet Saturday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Live Bet Saturday rolls on with me, Joe Cirillo, here with you for about the next hour and a half, hour 45 on the program. Got our incredible producer, Preston Saya, behind the scenes, holding things down for us here. And, you know, if only we could get our producers on the mic. I would love to have Preston chime in. He's truly got some of the worst takes you ever heard. No, I'm joking. Preston's got some great takes. He's holding it down for us. Great guests, Kyle Hunter right there, breaking down college football. And, you know, it's funny, Preston now is talking in my ear because he can't talk to all of you. The show would be so much better if we could have Preston here sharing his horrendous sports takes with the world. Going to have Gary Williams on shortly with his incredible takes as we talk the PGA playoff, FedEx St. Jude out there in Memphis, day three of the tournament, close to wrapping up out there in Tennessee. Going to break it down with Gary here shortly. Let's do a live look around, though. Joshua Baez. I mentioned it briefly at the top of the hour, but wanted to get to Kyle Hunter and his college football preview. Joshua Baez is the first player in Major League history to go deep three times. Each of his first three at-bats, the Cardinals lead the Cubs 7-3 after six. My Cubs bet, rip it up, throw it away, dead and gone. Not feeling good about that unless they have some late inning magic in them. But, you know, Matt Boyd was on the bump. Since he came off the injured list, my man is 6-0 with a 2.43 ERA. Thought they'd have a little something, but Baez had other plans. He has almost single-handedly tormented Boyd and the Cubs today. He's driven in six of St. Louis's seven runs, three long balls, and three at-bats as a major leaguer. I think, tweet at me, at the Joe Cirillo. I think if Baez retired today, you'd have to put him in Cooperstown. I want your thoughts on it. Tweet at me your thoughts on this Cardinals-Cubs game. The rest of the Major League slate, Jacob Mizorowski going to be on the bump tonight for the Milwaukee Brewers in about 3 hours. Nationally televised spot down the road for me. You know, our producer Preston, who I've mentioned a couple times here this segment, was actually asking me before the show, what, you know, my Saturday looks like, because we do Live Bet Sunday together every week. Preston does a great job producing it. Femi and I do an incredible job hosting it. And he was asking me, you know, he knows my Sunday routine. I wake up, I go to the farmer's market, do my show prep, and then boom, we're on air before you know it. But he was asking me about my Saturday routine. And usually, and Femi and I have gotten into this on some Live Bet Sundays, usually Saturday night involves some sort of nightlife here in West Los Angeles. I'm thinking tonight, maybe a hotel bar. It is the summer of hotel bars, 2026. That's been the move this summer. Santa Monica proper, down on 7th Street, view of the ocean, pretty people. It's a good scene. But I will say, if Dodger tickets found their way to me, and I typically avoid Dodger games like the plague because it's just such a pain in the ass to drive there. I mean, you're talking about Dodger Stadium. They've done no expansion in terms of how to get into the ballpark. You've got four entrances for a stadium of 60,000 people. It's just the traffic, even on a Saturday night, is nightmarish. It's very inconvenient and hard to get to. And it's also far. It's East LA, and I'm in West LA by the water. So it's a hike. The traffic's a nightmare. Going to a Dodger game is really an ordeal. And I usually do it once a year when the Mets are in town. This year I didn't because I had no faith in this Mets team from the start. Fortunately, I didn't go back in April because the Mets got swept. But this would be, if a ticket found its way in my lap, in my inbox, in my DMs, this would be the kind of game I would want to go to because you get a chance to see Jacob Mizorowski pitch. And he's one of those guys that when he's in town, it's appointment viewing. Right? When he's on your TV, it's appointment viewing. This is why you pay for the MLB TV package, to see Mizorowski pitch every fifth or sixth day. I mean, I was joking with Femi on Live Bet Sunday a couple weeks ago. I was like, I don't know, man, I might call out sick. Mizorowski's pitching against the Angels, and there are $5 tickets on the secondary market, because after all, it's the Angels. This would be a game worth making the treacherous trip to Dodger Stadium for. But that game is about 3 hours away from first pitch. Talked about at top of the show, light early slate in baseball. You know, you had the one early game, Chicago White Sox beat the Tigers 4-3, and then a few kind of trickling in here after. So you've got the Cardinals up 7-3 on the Cubs. That's in the top of the seventh. Yankees Jays was the third game to get underway, and Cam Schlittler was working in some real trouble there in the bottom of the third. He got out of it, just giving up one. So it is 1-1 here in the bottom of the fourth, Toronto up against the Yankees with one out and a full count to Valenzuela, who just fouled one off. Schlittler's nearing 70 pitches at four strikeouts. We need under 6.5. Now Valenzuela, who had a 3-0 count, all of a sudden it's 3-2. This is going to actually be a really big pitch here for me to see if Valenzuela can fight it off. Would be beautiful if the Jays got through this bottom of the fourth without a strikeout, kept Schlittler at 4-4, because as that pitch count climbs, he'll probably be at least 75 after the fourth. You know, keep it at a pace of a K per inning, and nope, Valenzuela, you jerk, just swung underneath a fastball that was down the middle. Unreal. Right down Broadway, and Schlittler just beat him. So that's strikeout number five. Losing wiggle room here. 5 Ks on 68 pitches. We'll keep you updated on that one if you tailed me and see how that goes. The New York Mets also in action, like their crosstown rival Yankees. That game just got underway. Sean Manaea for the New York Mets on the bump against the Nationals. It's nothing. Whoever's hitting leadoff for the Mets, I'm not sure if it's Lindor or Ewing. It is AJ Ewing. Lindor's up now. Well, Ewing just led off with, I was going to say a double. That would have been factually incorrect. He doesn't have a hit, but he's on second base. What happened there? He walked and he stole second. That's what a leadoff hitter should do. Lindor's got a 3-1 count now, too, with a guy in scoring position. The New York Mets all of a sudden are pretty damn hot. Started with Cleveland. It's continuing here into this Nationals series. What have the Mets done? They went to Pittsburgh. Took 2 out of 3. So they sweep Cleveland. This is all post-trade deadline. Since August 4th, the Mets won 5 out of 6, and then they lost 2 out of 3 to Atlanta. So that's what? 6-3 in 9 games. And they've won 7 out of 10 since the trade deadline. It's too little too late. They're still 15 games under 500. That's how bad they were. The day of the deadline, they were 19 under. But the Mets, since the trade deadline, have been a pretty profitable team. 7-3 in their last 10. Sean Manaea, I bring him up to say, he's had 4 straight quality starts. This is a guy who looked lost earlier in the season and has not regained his dominant 2024 form when he was their ace on a team that took the Dodgers 6 games in the NLCS that year. Last year was a disaster. This year, he was doing mainly bullpen work in the first half. Well, he's got four straight quality starts. Last time out, 7 innings, 1 run, 11 strikeouts against the Pirates for Manaea. So he got through that first inning easy, shutout ball, 2 strikeouts, just like 13 or 14 pitches. And now the Mets have first and second and none out in the bottom of the first. So they were about minus 130 coming into this one. And they are in pretty good shape here against the Nationals early. The Giants also have first and second in the home half of their first inning, except that comes with 2 outs against the Colorado Rockies as Schlittler just got his 6th strikeout again on a full count, again on a fastball. This one was way up and out of the zone. So he's at about 75 pitches. Not a great pitch count, but no room for error there. He might only go one more inning, but the Toronto Blue Jays, I cannot afford another strikeout there. So rough start to the day. Hopefully the later baseball action comes with a little more luck for me here than this early window of games has. Hey folks, football season's almost here and the sharp money is already moving. Here's how the sharp plays sees it all first. Exclusive data feeds from the four major sportsbooks, thousands of sharp bettors and professional syndicates tracked in real time before the market moves, and all of it is filtered and sorted by version 6.0 of their AI model. No steam chasing, no stale trends, no recycled plays. Follow the sharp money at sharpplays.com. We've got preseason football underway right now. The New Orleans Saints have just taken an early 7-0 lead over the Jaguars. It was a 9-yard rush from Audric Esteem. Who's at quarterback for the Saints? Spencer Rattler is their opening QB. So Tyler Shuck might not even play at all here. And the Rams out to a 3-0 lead in Arrowhead. 3 minutes to go in the first quarter there. That was the one game that I liked. Again, and I was very clear, I didn't play it, but the Rams as underdogs. Stetson Bennett, 4 for 6, 38 yards on that first drive. You know, you're not going to see starters from either of these teams, right? Justin Fields is out there for Kansas City. You're not going to see Mahomes. You're not going to see Kelsey. You're not going to see Xavier Worthy. None of the big names are going to be out there for a Sean McVay or an Andy Reid-led team week one of the preseason, right? There's not question marks at major positions. There's not competition at major positions. Competition's for QB2 right now for the Rams. So Stetson Bennett, because of his preseason track record and the fact that this is, after all, kind of like his Super Bowl, that was my lean, Rams money line, as they were 1.5 to 2.5 point underdogs. We're going to talk FedEx St. Jude, little golf up next. Gary Williams joins us. Don't go anywhere. It's Live Bet Saturday with Joe Cirillo.
This is Live Bet Saturday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Live Bet Saturday continues with me, Joe Cirillo, right here on VSiN. Big double play for Simeon Woods Richardson, the former Mets prospect, former Minnesota Twin, and now pitching for the Toronto Blue Jays in kind of this long relief role, swing starter, if you will. He's out of the pen today, and the Jays get an inning-ending double play as they have reached the halfway point, headed to the bottom of the fifth, tied at 1. Cam Schlittler heading out to the mound for what could be, depending on pitch count, his final inning of work. But that under 6.5 strikeouts, he's sitting at 6. Got 2 in a row to end the fourth. And that was, I needed that about as much as I need a stick in the eye. Let's just say that. That was not fun. Both on full counts, too, from Schlittler. And he just reared back, dialed up a heater each time. First one was right down Broadway. Valenzuela just swung under it. Second one was a good foot above the zone, and it got chased. And so he's at 6 strikeouts through 4 innings and about 70-something pitches. We'll be watching that closely as we watch all the live action closely here on a Live Bet Saturday. Live action in Memphis as we just have a little delay here. Gary Williams getting situated as he'll be joining us shortly. But the PGA playoff, weekend number 1 of 3 in the playoff, underway. It's day 3 out there in Memphis. And watch out, Sam Burns. What a day he has had. He has catapulted himself up from being T19 or T20 coming into the day. He is now alone in second place. His day is finished. He shot 8 under today. He's 11 under on the weekend. 8 under today. And now, actually, we just in real time just got a birdie from Scotty, who's in the lead. So Burns was 1 stroke off, now 2 strokes off of Scotty Scheffler for the lead out there in Memphis. Scheffler, 13 under. Burns, 11 under. And on the live odds, that birdie from Scheffler has propelled him to being more than a $2 favorite. He's minus 210 outright. Burns, 4-1 is your second shot. And then Tommy Fleetwood, your third shot at 10-1. So the books only have 2 guys shorter than 10-1 here. And it's your odds on favorite, Scotty Scheffler, who is just 2 under today after yesterday, round two. He was even better than Burns today. He was 9 under yesterday. Now today through 12 holes, rather, he's 13 under total. Through 12 holes, he's 2 under today. Burns, his day is done. He was 8 under. So let's break it all down with my favorite golf analyst, Gary Williams, the host of Five Clubs on SiriusXM and the Golf Channel. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, at GaryWilliams1Up, as he joins us via the Progressive Guest Line. Gary, how are you, my friend? It's great to see you.
Joe, it's great to see you. Things are good. I love listening to you breaking down Sam Burns' round. And you're right. It was similar to what Scotty did yesterday. And it's interesting. I honestly think, I don't know if you saw any of Scheffler's early round. You're trying to cover everything. That may be the worst 4-hole stretch that I've seen him play, holes 1 through 4 mm-hmm. today, in 5 years.
Oh, wow. That's pretty damning on his performance, but he's still 2 under for the day. He's still fighting through it. He's got a 2-stroke lead now. He just moved to minus 210 in the outright market. Burns is 4-1. No one else is shorter than 10-1. Fleetwood's your third shot at 10-1. Would you take a flyer on Burns here, or do you think that, you know, he gave it his best today and Scotty is going to reclaim control that he really never even lost here?
Yeah, you know, I would actually maybe look a little bit further down the board. And it's not that Sam Burns has not had a great year, but it's very strange that it doesn't matter who you are. Sam is now going to be the guy coming in off the super low round like Scotty was today. It is inherently difficult to back up a low one with the low one. I would look for somebody a little bit further down. And you mentioned Tommy Fleetwood. Certainly, he's the guy who was right there last year. And one other thing I would say, Joe, about Scheffler, and it's reflective of who he is. He played the first 4 holes as bad as he could, and you just said it. He's still 2 under par. He is so insistent on getting the most out of every single round. And really what's happened since he made the turn, he's putting good shot after good shot together. I would not be surprised if he still shot 65 today, despite really, again, that golf course, you got to take advantage of the first 5 holes. He didn't do it, but he'll still probably shoot 65.
Yeah, because that's just Scotty. He's a machine. He's unstoppable out there. Gary, a couple of guys who are T5 right now, but we've talked about a lot this season as guys who, you know, days 1, 2, and 3 can get your hopes up, and then they tend to crumble a bit day 4. Victor Hovland, Siwoo Kim, and the odds kind of reflect that expected crumble. Hovland's 1 over today. He's 62-1 to win it all, despite being T5. Siwoo Kim, 80-1. I mean, any shot these guys muster up some late round magic here, or is it going to be more of the same where stay away from them as Sunday approaches?
Yeah, I would say if you look at them, if you can make a play on a top 5 for both of them, it's interesting about Hovland. Let's remember, Victor Hovland beat Scotty in that playoff at the Travelers on a Monday morning, and he was playing alongside Scotty on Saturday, and then battled his way to get into the playoff. And then they both hit really good shots on that first playoff hole on Monday. And Hovland made and Scotty missed. Victor is very mercurial. You never know what you're going to get when he's on a good stretch. It's a good thing to ride him. But I in this particular case, I wouldn't. Here's what I would say about Siwoo Kim. He's having the best season of his career, even though he has not won yet this season. He has the most top 10s, most top 5s. It's his, the best position he has entered the playoffs in his career. And this is somebody who's won the Players' Championship. I say all that to say I wouldn't bet on them to win if you can make a top five play, because there's a lot of guys who have a chance to post a top five in this event. It's just very hard to get past Scotty. Here's the one thing I would say that's really weird to think about. It's the middle of August. Scottie Scheffler has not had a 54-hole lead on the PGA Tour yet this season. This is what he's trying to accomplish heading into tomorrow, because when he won the Amex at the beginning of the year, he was not the 54-hole leader. It's hard to imagine he hadn't had a 54-hole lead all year.
It's crazy. And then you factor in, like you've brought up a couple times, his start today, and he's still righted the ship to the tune of, in all likelihood, having a 54-hole lead after the day is done. Both of those guys, by the way, Hovland and Siwoo Kim, plus 170 each over on DraftKings to finish top five. So even if only one of them does, if you bet it on both, you're guaranteed to make a profit if just one of them closes with a top five finish. He's Gary Williams, host and EP of Five Clubs on SiriusXM and the Golf Channel. Gary, what's been the, let's go to positive and negative, biggest surprise through about two and a half, almost three full rounds of this FedEx St. Jude? Let's start with the positive. Has anyone really caught your eye that you feel good about them moving forward in this playoff?
Yeah. It's interesting you say feel good about. It's very hard to feel good about Jordan Spieth because he takes you on an amusement park ride literally every single round, every single week. Half the time you're like, I can't wait to ride this again. And then you get off and you want to throw up. He is so interesting to watch, because every time, Joe, that he gets close to where you feel like he's breaking through, he has not had a top 10 in 441 days on the PGA Tour. And he needs to keep doing what he's doing. He's currently right now in the top 50, which will get you into next week's BMW Championship. The last projection I saw, he was at 45. It's not that I feel good about him. It's that he's so darn interesting to watch. And he does battle. So he would be the guy that, look, it's a good week so far, looking to post his first top 10. The bad, it's not bad. It's just that it's more interesting if he advanced, is Jackson Koivun. He needed a two-way tie for seventh to make it into the BMW. He came into the week 70th. He is the young man at 21 years of age who won a couple of weeks ago at the 3M. And he needs to advance to have any chance of being on the President's Cup team. And right now it doesn't look like he's going to do it. So that would be my bad with a qualifier.
Yeah, Gary, and this one kind of bad too. Final 30 seconds here. What's up with Rory? Floor is yours. I'll leave the question at that.
Yeah, you know what? I did not think he was going to have a good week. Doesn't like the golf course. Hadn't played at all since the Open Championship. It has been a lost summer for Rory, and he goes on to the BMW with more questions.
Yeah, absolutely. I expected way more from him across the pond at the Open than what he ended up delivering. Gary, as always, great stuff. Appreciate you joining. Thanks so much for your time, man.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
Make sure you follow him on Twitter at GaryWilliams1Up. He is Gary Williams, the host and EP of Five Clubs over on SiriusXM and the Golf Channel. My favorite golf analyst in the game. No one breaks down the game in a better, more digestible way than Gary. How about Rory McIlroy? Holy crap. It's the only thing I can say when I look at the weekend he has had. Six over. He's done with today. He was two over today, four over day one, and shot an even par yesterday. That is what we would call no bueno. You know what is bueno? This show. More of it on the other side with me, Joe Serrallo, here on Visa.
This is Live Bet Saturday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
You know, I know it's the preseason and it doesn't matter. I mean, I'm the first one to say preseason, especially week one, doesn't really matter. How about the Chicago Bears opening up a can of whoop-ass on the Cleveland Browns, 34-10. Bears took them down as Live Bet Saturday rolls on with myself, Joe Serrallo, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And I'll tell you what, Caleb Williams obviously did not play And this game, regardless of the outcome, had and has no bearing on how much I love the Bears this season, but I love the Bears this season. I am very high on the Chicago Bears this year. And I guess, you know, this game, you're more so looking at the Cleveland Browns than anything on the Bears side of thing, right? Cleveland had all top three of their quarterbacks on the depth chart, which it's not an inspiring top three to say the least, but they all saw time. Deshaun Watson saw the most, and he looked the best. 11 for 15, 126 yards, no touchdowns, but no interceptions, and that's more than anyone else can say because Shador and Dylan Gabriel both were a combined 11 for 19 with an interception each. Gabriel took two sacks. Shador was the only quarterback not sacked. But pretty rough showings for each of them. Deshaun Watson, definitely the best. And I would say right now he's in the driver's seat to be the Browns starting quarterback week one. The Bears, they ran out Tyson Bagent. Case Keenum, who actually looked great, 9 of 10 for a 150 and two touchdowns. He had a perfect passer rating of 158.3. And then Miller Moss, the former USC product, who I believe, did he finish his career? No, he finished his career at Louisville after 4 years at USC that were pretty underwhelming, to say the least. Not that his lone season at Louisville was all that inspiring either. Miller Moss, I think, clearly your QB4, probably going to get cut from Chicago, as they seem to like Tyson Bagent out there, and Case Keenum is a great veteran to have in your quarterback room. But all that stuff aside, because Caleb Williams did not play, and Caleb Williams, you know, top target, Roma Dunes, did not play, I think the Chicago Bears are going to be really good this year. And I think that they're getting unfairly disrespected because you look at last year and they exceeded expectations. They go 11-6. They win the division. They have that miraculous comeback at home in the playoffs against Green Bay in that fourth quarter. And I think people are expecting regression, right? Everyone's favorite word in the betting business. And I just don't see room for regression. I see a quarterback who's only going to get better in Caleb Williams year three, a head coach who's only going to get better in Ben Johnson year two, a defense that got better. I love the Devin Bush signing to anchor that core as your middle linebacker. I loved the Kobe Bryant signing. Unfortunately, he got hurt, but should be back for the back end of their season. I think the Chicago Bears, with a terrific O-line and a quarterback who I believe will be in MVP discussions this season, are going to be even better than they were last year. Now, that might not translate to a better record because, newsflash, the schedule's a lot harder, but 9.5 at their win total, I find to be disrespectful. About even odds to make the playoffs, I find to be disrespectful. I think the Chicago Bears are actually going to run it back and win their division. And at 3-1, I think that number, like so many other, is disrespectful. I love the Chicago Bears team. I think that Caleb is truly going to be an MVP candidate this year. I think Caleb, you know, last year you obviously had Drake May taking the Patriots to 10 more wins than the year before, and Stafford finally getting that MVP award after the incredible season he had. I don't think Caleb was far behind those guys. The comeback magic that they had, some people can say it was fluky, and maybe those are the people calling for regression. I say take a hike. I think the Chicago Bears are absolutely the real deal. I think you look at every phase of their game. You look at in the trenches, on both sides of the ball, they're great. Secondary got better. Caleb's only going to get better. You know, this Caleb-Ben Johnson connection, what do we think? A rookie head coach and a sophomore quarterback aren't going to get better in year two together? Come on now. Come on now. What, do we really think that those guys are going to get worse? Ben Johnson was everyone's sought-after golden boy last coaching hiring cycle. The guy's phenomenal. And look at the way the Lions dipped off without Ben Johnson last year. He is a mastermind. And Caleb Williams, when you look at his God-given abilities, is as talented as any quarterback in the National Football League. Just physical talent, he might have the strongest arm in the NFL. I mean, did you see the throw he made, the touchdown against the Rams in the playoffs, off his back foot, running for his life after his O-line got penetrated? And he back foot, perfect ball placement, corner of the end zone. Oh, by the way, it was also about 40 yards with his momentum taking him to the ground. The guy is a stud. And I feel like a lot of people enjoyed his struggles his rookie year, sacked more than anyone else in the game, right? It was either first or second, him and CJ Stroud. But last year, they invested. They shored up the O-line. They got better on defense, and it showed on the field. And I think that's going to be the same exact case this season, where the Bears were not a flash in the pan. The Bears were not a fluke. They had the Rams up against the ropes in the divisional round of the playoffs last year. That was a tight game at SoFi Stadium. And that was actually, I believe, at Soldier Field. Excuse me, because the Rams were a wild card team last year. Nonetheless, that was a really tight game. And the Bears, despite being at home, were underdogs in that one. And they had a real shot. So I look at this schedule with Chicago now, and I see plus money to the over 9.5. Guys, 10 wins isn't what it used to be. 10-6 was really damn impressive. 10-7 is more mediocre, right? It's wild card territory, but it's more mediocre now that the schedule has expanded. So to have that total at 9.5, I find to be insulting. You think this team's going to go 9-8? You think Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams are going to lead a 500 team out there? No, no shot. Let's look at this schedule here for our TV audience. And for you folks listening on the radio, be it through our syndicates or SiriusXM channel 158, I'll break it down for you guys. At Carolina is how they start the year. Then they host Minnesota, who could be frisky. And, you know, I'm going to do what I do, what I did with the Giants, what I do with probably 26 out of 32 teams. And I'll just say division 3-3. I'll just take the division out of the equation, and I'll just put them 3-3 against their division. Week 3, they host the Eagles Monday night. It's a winnable game. They might be home dogs there. Winnable game. Then they host the Jets. Then they go to Green Bay. Then they go to Atlanta. That first third, right, that first six, I'm probably looking at, you know, 4-2, I think is fair. Then you go short week, week 6-7, they host the Patriots. People might say, oh, it's a loss. Patriots were just in the Super Bowl. I'm not giving them a loss. Thursday night football favors the home team. The Patriots, we talked last year about how weak that AFC was. And you look at their path to the Super Bowl, and not diminishing anything. Mike Vrabel, say what you want about his off the field crap with Diana Russini and all that nonsense. On the field, Mike Vrabel's as good a coach pound for pound as any. That said, New England's path to the Super Bowl last year, far different than the NFC route, right? A Chargers team with no O-line in the cold going from SoFi to Foxborough. A Texans team going from Houston to Foxborough with no offensive line. And then a Denver Broncos team that if they had Bo Nix probably wins the game by 10 points or more, but they had Jarrett Stidham at quarterback, and they still hung in there in the first half of action. So New England Thursday night football, I'm saying advantage Chicago at home at Soldier Field. Then I lost the schedule, guys. What do we have after that? I think we had Seattle off the top of my dome after that New England game. That, I'll give them a loss. I still really like the Seattle team. It's prime time. Even though the Bears will have a rest advantage, it's a road game at Seattle. And they come home. Tampa Bay in prime time. Soldier Field, advantage Bears. Like, I'm looking at their non-division games, and I only see two games where I'm going, yeah, they'll probably lose. And that's at Seattle and at Buffalo. And even if they lose two more games, non-division, going, you know, 3-3 in their division, you're looking at 10-7. I think the Bears are once again going to go 11-6. I think they could go 12-5. I'd be more confident, to put how much I love this team into perspective, taking an alternate total over 10.5 wins than going under 9.5 on their normal total. I love the Chicago Bears this season. I think that after the Rams, the Bears are on that next tier, because the Rams are kind of in a league of their own right now, right? Super Bowl odds mentioned plus 550. I think that after the Rams, the Chicago Bears are on that next tier of contenders in the NFC. I think it's Rams, draw the line, Bears, Seahawks, Lions, Eagles. That's that next tier, tier two. I have the Niners and the Cowboys a tier below them. I mean, Dallas, if you're high on Dallas, you can be high on them, you know, making the playoffs. If you're high on them doing anything past being a 6 or a 7 seed, I think you're delusional. But there's been a lot of delusional Cowboy fans that I've come across since 1994. One of them I happen to love working with. His name is Femi Abefe. We do a lot of shows together on this network. Delusional Cowboys fan. They're not a contender. I think the NFC, it's the Rams, draw the line, and then it's the Bears, Lions, Seahawks, Eagles, in no particular order. Just those four teams make up the next tier. And to have the Bears win total at 9.5, I find to be a big mistake by the market. Like I said, I'd rather go over 10.5 wins than under 9.5 losses for Ben Johnson, Caleb Williams, and the Chicago Bears. I'm Joe Cirillo. It's Live Bet Saturday, Hour 3 on the other side.